and shatter.
May thy knife chip and shatter.
May thy knife chip and shatter.
Like, cut. Let's do a redo. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Flacco Presents. I'm your usual host, Flacco, and I have my usual guest here, or not even just guest. You guys are like the official members, basically.
It's about time you asked us to be the official members.
Introduce yourselves.
Maya.
Hey, Alicia here.
Yeah, we're here for another episode, and it's the first episode for the new season, because it's 2024, because the last episode we did was like late last year. So mm-hmm. Like,
what did we do?
We did Attack. No, wait. Yeah. It was actually last year.
Attack on Titan, I believe.
No, actually, that was the first. Oh, I forgot. That's the first episode of this season. Because remember, the finale came out, I think, February or January.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. For some reason, it felt like last year, late last year.
Yeah, I felt like forever ago.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But here we are. So this is the second episode of the new season, people. So
yeah.
My mistake. Mm-hmm. So yeah, because last time we talked, it was a anime series. So now, all right, for the year, we're doing our first episode of the year of talking about a movie again. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're here to talk about Dune Part 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve, who's known for making movies like Blade Runner 2049,
mm-hmm.
Arrival, Sicario.
Love all those movies.
Yes.
Pretty good movie.
He even made Prisoners, which I always forget.
That movie.
Yeah, he made that one.
Prisoners?
It's the one with Hugh Jackman, where his daughter and his...
Jake Gyllenhaal.
His daughter was kidnapped. His daughter.
Never watched that movie.
You never have? It's a really good one.
I never watched it.
Yeah, but it's really good. It's really good. But he made that movie, and he made a few other movies before that too. But yeah, he's known for making those movies. Dune Part 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve, and starring Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Javier Bardem, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, Leia Seydoux, Stellan Skarsgård, Charlotte Rampling, and of course the iconic Christopher Walken.
There he is, people.
Christopher Walken. But yeah. So here's Dune Part 2. So the first movie, Dune Part 1, came out around 2021. Yeah, 2021.
That's like 2 years ago.
Not too long ago. And I remember the first time watching it, we didn't even watch it in the theaters. We just watched it straight to HBO Max. Yeah, because I remember the movie was being marketed, because it was during the everybody was still
like quarantined
and stuff. I mean, at least by 2021, people were slowly just not caring. We're just kind of like, we're just going to go to theaters. And I remember for when that movie was going to be released, I don't remember if they released it in the theaters and then went straight to HBO Max.
I think it was in theaters for a little bit, and then it went to HBO Max.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was like pretty, like within like a month, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, it was like right. So it wasn't like that long and stuff. So and they put it to HBO Max, and that's how I remember we watched it. And I remember watching it. I liked it, but I didn't love it. I thought it was fine. It really felt like a long prologue. That's what mm-hmm. it felt like an introduction. Yeah, introduction
to the next sequel.
Yeah, to the sequel and stuff. Because that's what it was like when you like it was good, but at some point it was just set up, and it was like, all right,
mm-hmm.
like I get where it's going, but you know,
yeah
but
like hurry it up.
Yeah, but it was still good, but it just felt like a really long prologue.
That's honestly, I was really bored.
Which I understand.
Yes, but that was like, I didn't know anything about the world, and I tried to learn more of it, and I remember watching YouTube videos, but I just couldn't grasp it, and it honestly like left my mind. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about it ever again until Dune Part 2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember you briefly before, I think when the trailer came out, you briefly mentioned that this story kind of in a way inspired Star Wars.
Yes, because Dune is one of those books that inspired a lot of pieces of fiction and fantasy. So like without Dune, we wouldn't have Star Wars and other pieces of work. Mm-hmm. To the point where, like, I remember watching the first movie, and then, like, I thought of Star Wars because there was a lot of things in the movie that they did that I was like, wait, that's Star Wars did that. Like, what the heck? So I was like, bro, George Lucas took a lot of stuff from Dune.
You kind of compared. You pretty much compared the two.
Yeah, like a lot. Like the voice is kind of, like, similar to, like, the Jedi.
The Force.
Yeah, the Force. The
mind tricks.
Spies. Yeah. Like, the... Yeah, like, I'm trying to think. Was there something in Star Wars that was, like, basically the spice, but it was, like, different?
I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not. Well, Tatooine is basically the Dune planet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a certain kind of way.
Certain characters.
Yeah, certain characters were obviously based on characters from Dune. Like, because people kept saying Paul was, like, Luke, but I was like, no, I think Paul was, like, Anakin. Or at least Anakin was, like, heavily inspired by Paul or something like that. But yeah. And I remember when that movie came out, there was a lot of mixed reactions. Like, everybody was... I remember a lot of people just only watched the first movie because Zendaya was just in it. Like, that's it.
Well,
that's
why I wanted to watch. Well, in the trailers, they made it look like Zendaya was going to be in the movie a whole lot.
But she was only in, like, small scenes and just, like,
pretty sure people were like, damn it.
Yeah, because people were like, that's it? What? But I thought it was so funny. Everyone's reaction was like, wait, that's it? What? Yeah. But I understand, again, it was setting... She plays a bigger... Setup. She plays a bigger part in the next movie, so, like, I understand. Because I remember I did think maybe that's why the cast was, like, an all-star cast, because they knew, like, all right, if we're gonna adapt this piece of literature, you know, how we're gonna market this. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, let's put Timothée Chalamet, all right. I mean, he has the look, so let's put him as Paul. Mm-hmm. Zendaya, all right, she's pretty big, too. Let's have her as Chani. Let's have this person as Oscar Isaac. As Duke Leto, which was really perfect.
He was
very
handsome.
Yeah, very handsome.
Very handsome. That's the reason why I kind of find it like really great that they put in an all-star cast for these
movies. Yeah, but an all-star cast that actually fit the characters. Like, it wasn't like, oh, an all-star cast and they just,
more,
you know,
accurate.
Yeah, all that stuff. So, like, yeah, like, it was pretty cool. But, yeah, but now part two is out. And that's why when part two was coming out, I was interested in watching it, but I was like, I don't know where this is going to go. Because part one, it was good, but it wasn't amazing. Like, I didn't love it. So it was like, okay, so how is this going to go? You know what I mean? Because everyone kept saying, oh, this is when, you know, like, stuff gets real. This is when stuff gets really good. And it's like, okay, like, I want to believe you, but, like, what if it's, you know, so what if it's just another setup? You know what I mean? But yeah, when it came, we heard people, early reactions, we heard early reviews on it, and everybody was saying that, like, nah, dude, like, this is actually really good, like, better than the first
one. People kept saying that if you weren't really a fan of the first movie, you might enjoy this movie a bit more.
Yeah, that's what I heard, too. And there was even people that were saying, oh, this is a masterpiece, this is gonna save cinema, which I'm like, all right, like, that might be a stretch, but all right, like, I am curious, though, so... Yeah, and then we ended up seeing part two because it was like, all right, we hear even more and more interesting things about part two. So we were like, all right, you know.
Let's see it for ourselves.
Yeah, we watched it. So then the synopsis for part two is that it takes place a few minutes right after the first movie. Because I think in the book,
I honestly thought it's been a month, but no, it's just a few minutes. A few minutes after.
I thought it was a month as well, but people were saying, no, actually it took like, it's, like, right after the first, which is a few minutes.
Dang. So if, like, you watch them, like, in order, it's, like, right after the other.
Yeah.
Literally, right after.
Kind of like The Matrix, where, like, Revelations took place right after Reloaded, where it was just, like, literally a few minutes after stuff that happened the first one. I mean, or second one. So I was like, all right. But, yeah, it takes, like, a few minutes after the first one, after the events of Paul's family being destroyed, like, his whole house and everything got destroyed because of the villains, right? So that's why now he's in the desert with his mom, with the Fremen. So the whole rest of the story of the second movie is basically him trying to survive alongside with the Fremen, trying to learn their ways and help them defeat the Harkonnens while learning the ways to help him and his mother to find a way to go fight back and win against his throne on the house and stuff, and on the royal family and on the house and stuff. So yeah, that's pretty much the plot. It's just him trying to, like, avenge his father and his family and take back his throne, but also trying to at least help the Fremen and free their people. But as the movie goes on, you know, Paul starts to kind of changes. He goes from questioning himself about this whole prophecy and not wanting to accept the fact that he could be the chosen one to kind of slowly accepting it, but also doing some things that's a little like, all right, like in his head, he thinks what he's doing is good. What he's doing, like, I'm doing this because this is the, you know, I'm doing this because I'm the chosen one. Prophecy says this, I'm going to do this and this and that. But realistically, it's like, yeah, man, but like, I don't know if this is a good idea, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's basically the whole, that's basically the whole plot of Dune Part 2. Now, like I said, there was a lot of reactions, a lot of talk saying that this movie is a masterpiece, this movie will save cinema and all that kind of stuff. Now that we watched it, what do we think? Well, let's talk about it. So now that we've watched it, I gotta say, I think we can all agree that we were actually very surprised after watching this movie. And I think we all agree, I'm assuming we agree that that this one is way better than the first one. Like yes. I think it's way better than the first one. But I do say this, even though I think this one's way better, it did make me appreciate the first one a bit more. Yes. I understand, because mm-hmm. now that we see what happened in part two, I get what
you
the first
movie
you have
some appreciation for the first movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I understand what the first one was like building up for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that it actually took its time rather than just rushing through things. Because I think that this movie, the previous movie and this movie were like 2 hours long.
The first one was 2 hours long, but this one I think was a bit longer.
Yeah, I think this one was like almost 3 hours.
Yeah, it was almost 3 hours.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, you know, I get what you mean. I think both movies, well, the pacing, this one was a bit better.
Yes.
The first one, the pacing was fine, but when it went to the third act, that's when you can kind of tell they were rushing it. They were like, all right, let's.
Yeah, because it felt like the first two thirds were really slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, where is this even going?
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't sure, because it kind of kept them in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, like.
Yeah.
And then, yes, I agree. The end of it felt rushed. That's why I was like, okay, whatever that was.
Yeah, like, oh, that happened. While this one was like, all right, this was, the pacing in this one was mostly really good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this one, I gotta say, I could see why people were hyping this movie up. Like, people went to go see it early.
Mm-hmm.
I can actually see it now. I'm like, okay, you know what? This one was really, really good. Like, I gotta say.
And I wasn't even expecting to watch it in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was just kind of like, I'll just wait till it comes on streaming. Because honestly, like, I didn't even really care for the first one. And honestly, it was kind of like being spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, hey, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go watch it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't seen a movie in a long time in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's just go watch
some
it.
Good popcorn.
Yeah, some good popcorn, bro. That fucked us up.
Oh, I got something to say about that. Yeah, people, this movie is almost 3 hours long, right? So I had this idea in my head, like, you know what? I had me and Alicia had a large bucket of popcorn. I'm like, you know what? The movie's still going. I finished it. Let me refill this up, because this movie's pretty long. So we did that, and then the next day, the next day, I woke up 3 a.m. with a legit bad stomach ache because of those two large ass buckets of popcorn.
With good butter, mind you.
It was good this time. That's the thing. The popcorn was really, really good this time.
We take our popcorn very seriously.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. We do. But but that was the reason why at least mostly me, I ate like two buckets of popcorn, because the movie, that's how long the movie was. But mm-hmm. anyway, yeah. But
you're crazy.
Yes, I am. But it was worth it. It was worth it. It was good.
Worth it.
But would I do that again? Probably not. No.
Yeah.
But this movie was really, really good. And I think this movie, after watching it, because people, you've listened to us many times about how much we complain about certain franchises that, like, unfortunately, visually just don't look good. Because, unfortunately, studios don't really pay a lot of their effects artists a lot.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why lately a lot of movies, especially franchises that use a lot of CG or green screens, just look really bad
really
and stuff.
Cheap.
Really cheap, really bad. Or, like, when you look up the budget, it's a really high budget. When you watch the movie, you're like, why does it look like a video game?
Like, you guys mm-hmm. put how much money?
Yeah.
Like, if you were going to make trash movies, at least give it away.
Yeah.
Give away that money.
But watching this movie, we were all blown away, because, like, it's like, they did a good job using, there's like a good balance between CG and a lot of practical effects. But not just practical
Which
effects.
Which is very impressive in
yeah,
this movie.
Very impressive, but not just practical effects, but even the settings was really good. Like, you could, Like, they didn't, like, you could probably tell that there were moments where you can tell they used green screen, but there was a lot of moments where it really felt like they were just a full-on
desert. They were really there.
Like, they were really there, or at least you could kind of tell.
I know they actually did film in, like, deserts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's not all fake. No, a lot of it was, like, on location. Like, they actually filmed at locations, and obviously for the impossible architecture, that was, like, CG, but a lot of, like, the desert was real.
Okay.
They actually went to places for that.
Because I was kind of predicting that he probably built legit sets and they just had to put a bunch of sand, you know what I mean? But but that's really cool. No,
I saw, I remember I saw like this TikTok that had like the locations, and it was like a good amount, and like some of the places were real. And I think the one where because I know the desert was a real desert, I don't know which one it was. I think some of it was in the Middle East, I believe. And the palace of the emperor with his daughter, that's like a legit like private garden, like spa garden, that's in like England. And like they never really, they actually never allow like people to like film in there. But I guess because the owner of the place, their son is like a big Dune fan, so they actually allowed them to to film it. That's what I read.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true. Don't fact check me, please, but that's what it, that's what they said, and I was like, oh my god, that's so cool.
That's actually really, really cool.
Yeah, so that's really why cool. I really appreciated the movie, and that's why I felt like I caught myself like sitting on the edge of my seat, because the locations look so good.
Yeah, that is really, really cool, dude.
Yeah.
Because like, I remember from the jump, the effect, like, so what they did was really cool. Like, there was a moment where the villains were, like, floating in the air, because it was like the hover suit or whatever that lets them float in the air and stuff. So usually if this was made by somebody else, they would just like, it would be an obvious CG effect, right, where they're like, and they just fly up. But no, it looked like it, you can kind of tell they were using wires maybe, so when they were floating it looked like they were actually hovering in the air. So I was like,
which is really cool.
Like stuff like that, or even the gadgets they use were pretty cool, like really practical and stuff. Like, and like the ships when they're flying, it's like, all right, CG, right?
Yeah, but
like
you don't have actual planes.
Like, but like when it's close-ups and everything like
The close-ups, I think like even like the helicopter, like they actually have like you're inside of an actual thing that's built. So it looks like you're sitting in a real helicopter.
And like visually, just like the planets they're in, the locations, they just look so beautiful. Really good. Again, even the moments where they are using green screen, it still looked good. And that's why as I was watching it in my head, I was like, bro, like, this is really, really good, man. Like, this is really good. That's why it makes me wonder, like, bro, if you just give these artists, like, a good amount of the money that they needed to make this stuff happen, your movie can look really, really good. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, I thought that was...
Sadly, most movies don't really do that.
Yeah, or, like, a lot of studios are just, you know, just being ass and be like, no.
We're gonna pay you shit, nothing, and then have you create everything through CG, and then it's gonna look like crap, but who cares, because people are gonna pay for it anyways. Which, hate that.
Yeah, man. Like, the Dune planet, of course, looks really good, but even the planet of, like, the Harkonnens, like, the villains, that planet, bro.
It kind of gave me Tron.
Yes!
It just reminded me of Tron.
And also, I love the fact that it just went from color to black and white the characters move into the ring.
The
ring.
And the gladiator fight, right?
It's so cool. Visually stunning.
And the sun was black, right? Like, the sun wasn't the sun.
I think their sun only shows ultraviolet light, so I think that's why everything is in black and white.
Okay. All right. But, you know, it was cool because there was that moment with the fireworks.
They even have their own fireworks.
Yeah, but it looks like black powder, like goo that just pop in the air.
They said they wanted it to make it look like black liquid, like, you know, like black food coloring when you drop it into water, and how it just kind of like, just like,
right,
like floats around and stuff. That's how they wanted the fireworks to look.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Katy Perry fireworks.
Because even you're fireworks.
I love that song.
Even like, I think I even the in the imagery of like the visions, when like Paul had the visions, even that stuff looked cool. Like there was that vision where like when Lady Jessica was walking, and then there was like people just on the desert just died. Like that whole image, like that visuals were pretty cool.
There are so many shots of this movie where I'm like, wow, I want that as my wallpaper.
Yeah. Because it was even interesting that in the first movie, I don't know why Denis Villeneuve did this. I thought it was an interesting choice, but there was a lot of shots that were like heavily inspired or borrowed from Apocalypse Now, and I don't know why he did that. Like, it's pretty cool, but I was kind of curious, like, I kind of wonder why he did that.
Yeah,
because like there was that shot where the villain was like when he was in that shower thingy, And he was, like, rubbing his bald head, and that was a reference to...
Even I noticed that.
Yeah, because I remember me and you, we were watching it, we were like,
For a second, I thought you were going to say balls.
No.
No, no, no.
Balls.
Rubbing his balls. Rubbing his
balls. reference to Chucky?
Yeah. My eyes. No, but, like, he was rubbing his head, and then I was, just like how...
Colonel Kurtz, I think that's his name.
Marlon Brando's character. Yeah, the villain in the movie. Yeah, when he was like rubbing his head and he was like, he was all watery and everything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought it was kind of cool. And then I saw an image on Instagram where somebody was comparing these shots and I was like, oh wow. I was like, okay, that's kind of interesting. But I also heard that, I think Denis Villeneuve was also inspired by this old movie that came out years ago called Lawrence of Arabia. So I heard, I think visually that movie was an inspiration to Dune as well, like the the Dune movie. So I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. I never seen the movie, but I heard of it. But I thought that was actually pretty cool. But what else? It's like fashion. The fashion, bro. The fashion, absolutely costume design,
stunning. So good,
really, really good. And I want to make sure I bring this up because I know you're a fashion girl. So.
I love fashion. I'm a big, you know, big fashion girl. I always watch a bunch of like YouTube videos about it, like especially in movies. Oops, sorry, I'm doing my nails while we're doing this.
No, it's good.
No shame in it. Can I just say my favorite outfit was Florence Pugh's, the one that she wears that has like the, it almost looks like chain armor. What's the character's name, mind you?
It was it's like Princess Arulon or something like
Arulon.
That.
Arulon. There pretty much Christopher Walken's daughter.
Daughter, yeah, the Emperor's daughter.
So good. It just reminded me, it just gave me, what's her name? What's her name? Joan of Arc?
Yes,
oh,
yeah.
It reminded me of that. Loved it. Mm-hmm. And, sorry.
No, it's all good.
And I thought all her outfits were so good because, again, she is, like, the Emperor's daughter. So, obviously, her fashion is going to be, like, a lot more.
She has,
like,
to look the part.
Yeah, but it's not, like, over the top. It's just, like, very, like, sleek. And it honestly kind of reminded me of Princess Leia.
Yeah,
so,
like,
you kind of compare the two.
Yeah.
Or not just Princess Leia, but, like, the fashion of, like, on the planet Naboo.
Yeah.
In Star Wars. Like,
Padme.
Okay, was from.
That's okay. Those movies, you guys can have your opinions about the prequels, but the fashion of Padme's fashion in the
were
prequels
amazing.
Was so good.
They were amazing. They were so amazing.
I've seen more fashion of her in the Clone Wars.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so. Yeah, that too. I was gonna say that, like, because I knew the fashion was gonna be good because of the first movie. Because the fashion in the first movie was really good.
It was not bad. It was very impressive.
Especially with like the House of Atreides, but I think in this one the fashion was like even more cool. I was like, all right. Like, I even like the outfits of, like, the Fremen, like, what they wear and everything. I thought it was really cool.
And I like how they kept in touch with them having blue eyes.
Yeah, because of the spice, right? Because, like, I think in the lore, they say, like, if you consume the spice, like, your eyes do. They don't glow blue. They just look blue.
They
like
just look blue.
Like, from certain angles, like, if you look closely, it's blue. But, like, from, like, another angle, it looks normal and stuff.
But it's not, like, blue eye color. It's, like, the whole eyeball is blue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always thought it was a really cool touch that they did.
Yeah.
I always thought it was a cool touch.
I really liked Lady Jessica's outfits too, and I feel like it really helps, like, make her, like, gives you an idea of, like, how to feel about her character, because she's wearing, like, the outfits of the, what is it called?
The Fremen, or
no? She's like not. She's not like a Bene Gesserit. She's a Bene Gesserit, but like her title.
Yeah.
Supreme Mother.
Yeah.
Supreme Mother?
Because I know the title, Reverend Mother.
There you go. Reverend Mother of the Fremen, which are obviously based on, like, Middle Eastern culture. So you can see, like, the outfit that she's wearing is heavily inspired by it, but obviously you feel uneasy because you can tell, like, this is obviously a white lady. Like, a rich white lady.
Yeah.
And it feels like from a political family, and it feels off her wearing it, but that makes sense because, like, it kind of gives an idea, like, maybe you shouldn't be trusting her.
Yeah.
Because here she is adopting, like, this title, and, like, the Fremen are following her around, like, believing what she says.
And her plans.
Yeah.
And what she's, like, scheming in a way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you on that. Because at first I was like, I don't know about this. But as I kept going, I was like, okay. I like how the movie's not playing off, like, oh, look at this. It's playing off, like, she's up to something.
Yeah.
Like, and what she's doing is probably not, you know,
especially
not good
how she's treating the Fremen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I always, but because of the framework, we're heavily inspired by like Middle Eastern culture. Mm-hmm. I did like the how like they did they the fashion was heavily inspired by that, mm-hmm. and I thought that was really, really cool. What else? I also like the fashion of the Harkonnens. Yes. It was pretty interesting. Like the armor, like the armors were cool, but I was kind of curious, like what like their normal outfits look like. And mm-hmm. we saw, what's his name? Like Austin Butler's character. I did think his outfits was pretty cool. Not gonna lie, I did like what's her name? What's her name? Lady Margot, the Bene Gesserit lady that seduced Fade Rotha. Her outfit was pretty cool.
I loved the hood. I loved it because it was like a hood. Like a dress, and it's like short sleeve, but like it's like a hood that connects mm-hmm. to the whole dress. I really loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I remember when she came in, I thought she was Harkonnen because of the lighting, but you know, it was just the planet. Like if you're, it's just how the planet looks. Like if you're in there, you're gonna look like in certain areas, you're gonna look like plain all white and stuff.
If you're like outside with the sunlight, but if you're inside with no sunlight reaching, you look it's like normal colors.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I even like how the Harkonnens. I think. In certain lighting, their teeth is black.
Yeah.
And stuff like, I remember like Austin Butler's character.
I noticed that.
Yeah, his teeth was black. When they were fighting, he was like, I was like, okay, the black teeth.
Oh, speaking of fashion, I loved those like the guards that were like circling them when they were fighting, how they were wearing all black.
It looked like devil-like.
Honestly reminded me of like, what's it called? Of the, what are they called? The xenomorphs.
Yes. Yeah. Xenomorphs,
you know, they're like black and like rubber leather mm-hmm. looking, and they're just like all covered in it. That kind of reminded me of that. Oh my god!
And the way they move,
the spears.
Because it kind of made you think, like, are they human? Like, what? Because how they move is just like so like creepy. Mm-hmm.
No.
It kind of gave Slenderman.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh no, mm-hmm. I could see that. I was gonna. I'm glad you brought the whole xenomorph thing, because I almost forgot to mention that, like, there was a lot of stuff with the Harkonnens. It reminded me of the artist, the guy who created the alien.
Yes.
It reminded me of the stuff that he made, because mm-hmm. I mentioned this to you guys after watching the movie, but that when that one crazy director, Jodorowsky, tried to make his own version of Dune, he wanted that artist to be involved in the movie to make the villains. So I think Denis Villeneuve probably saw that, and he was like, hey, let me use that idea in this movie just to pay tribute to that artist and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because that artist, he passed away like years ago and stuff. So I thought that was actually kind of cool that they did that. But yeah, is there any other fashion stuff that you guys thought that was kind of cool?
I did like that the Fremen all kind of like, none of their outfits were like flashy. Outside of the Reverend Mother, no one had a bunch of jewelry on. Mm-hmm. Like there was no like royal family. Mm-hmm. They were all like in a community together.
Yeah.
And how they dressed was practical. Like obviously mm-hmm. like the fighters, they all dressed the same. But like you could tell that the outfits had a purpose mm-hmm. and it's meant for them to help them basically survive in the desert and to like, I mean, some parts were cool where they hidden under the sand.
Yes.
But they have like helmets that like can help them breathe. Like the actual like people like, that are living within like the rock mountain things, mm-hmm. like, they all kind of dress like comfortably. Like I'm sure it's super fucking hot, so it's to help keep them cool. And but like mm-hmm. no one is dressed like, you know what I'm saying, flashy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, no.
Like opulence, you know, it's not like that. They're all just kind of like in community. We're thinking about the good of everybody. Mm-hmm. But then when you see like the people of the royal families, they're obviously dressed in really elaborate clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the Reverend Mothers of like the other like planets, like they're definitely dressed like almost like nuns.
Yeah, because I think that the inspiration for their outfits was like heavily inspired by like Catholic nuns from like like centuries mm-hmm. ago and stuff. You were gonna say something?
I was gonna point out by that because I even looked closely
mm-hmm.
and I thought that it's funny because in a certain lighting mm-hmm. you can't really see their face a whole lot, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get a good look at them, you can kind of see them.
Yeah. Because I remember when the Reverend Mother, like the mm-hmm. legit Reverend, not Lady Jessica, but like the actual Reverend Mother, like the main Bene Gesserit we saw many times mm-hmm. from the first movie and in this one, I couldn't see her face, so I thought she was the, you know that actress, the old British actress, I forgot, she was the older sister in Shazam: Fury of Gods.
Oh, I know her talking about.
I thought it was her for some reason, but no, when they showed her face, I was like, oh, it's not her. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, okay. But no, but I always thought that was so cool.
So cool and creative.
Yeah, like I always thought that was cool because it kept them, it in some way made them mysterious and stuff like that. And I always liked that because I know that in like past Dune adaptations, they don't cover their face. They just, like, have the outfit and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But I like how in this one, they cover their faces. Because it makes them mysterious, and they kind of are. Because in the Dune lore, they're supposed to be pulling the strings behind the scenes, right? Yeah, so I think that's actually a cool touch that they did that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, like, the fashion is
It's almost like they don't want to draw attention to themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, of what happened in the first movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not supposed to be, like, individuals. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no, like, I get to, like, choose my own destiny. It's like everything is calculated to the T. So it's like they don't really have, there's not a point for, like, people to get attached to them or, like, mm-hmm. care about them as people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. But yeah, man, like, fashion. Amazing. So it was good. Really cool.
So good.
Another thing that I think, I remember me, you, we talked about a few weeks ago, because we were talking about movies and stuff, and we appreciate the fact that the action in this movie, the fighting choreography, is really, really, really good.
Yes.
Like, which had me surprised.
It's funny, because in the first movie, there wasn't really a whole lot of, there were some action into it, but mostly it's just people talking, mm-hmm. just one area, but I like how this one has more action into it.
Yeah, because when you read the book, Frank Herbert, when he wrote down action scenes, he didn't really write them out. He just basically would mention, and they fought. And that's it. Like, he will write down, like, all the
fought. He doesn't go in detail about it.
Yeah, he doesn't go into detail. He just basically lets you assume, like, yeah, and they fought. And then
this is who won.
Yeah, and this person won. So I can understand why for movie reasons, they're like, okay, we need to, like, legit do some action scenes. Mm-hmm. So the first movie was more like the first movie felt like a legit prologue. So that's why it was more just characters talk about politics with each other and not a whole lot of action. While this one, it makes sense why there's a lot of more action in this one, because now the whole plot is about Paul and his mom fighting the Harkonnens or Harkonnens, you know, however you want to pronounce them, fighting alongside with the Fremen and stuff. So mm-hmm. yeah, the action in this was really cool. I think personally my most favorite fight, at least to me, was when they introduced I'm trying to get his name right. Fade Rotha, Austin Butler's character, when he was fighting against those other people, the prisoners. Mm. The prisoners, like the Atreides prisoners.
Yeah.
That they kept alive, and how it was his birthday. And I guess in their fights, they usually have him wear shields. But I think the Baron purposely deactivated the shield to be like, nah, I want to make this more challenging for him since it's his birthday.
Yeah.
And I thought that fight was really, really good. Yes. It was a really, really cool good. Fight. But yeah, that was
my favorite fight. It kind of causes you to have the edge of your seat.
Yeah, because he was a psychopath.
And the fact is, he enjoys the thrill of that.
Yeah.
What kind of, like, kind of grossed me out was the fact that, like, the people that, the other two people that he has that are fighting, they're drugged. Like, they're these really biff
yes.
guys.
They purposely have them drugged.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that way, the Harkonnen guy wins, which made me so kind of just angry and just, mm-hmm. ugh. Because I was just like, you're not playing fair.
Yes, you're not.
Right. It's rotten.
It's wrong. But like, yeah, because remember there was that one guy they didn't drug. And that was another reason why they wanted to make it challenging for him. Mm-hmm. So that's when Fade Rotha was like, all right, cool. Like,
happy birthday, nephew.
Yeah, happy birthday, nephew. He was like, all right, cool. And
I'm going to cut that cake, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now birthday cake after the fight. No, but that fight person for me, I think that was like my most favorite fight.
Yeah.
But what was your favorite fight, or at least battle scene?
I have to say, it's got to be, there are so many fights in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the final battle, I believe.
That final battle was cool.
It was really cool.
Oh, wait, the final battle when they were charging?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That was pretty cool.
That was a pretty cool fight.
That one had me hyped, not gonna lie. When they were charging,
especially
I was like...
Especially when Zendaya character...
Chani.
Where she was, like, getting to the action.
Yeah, oh, that was cool when she jumped... Bah, 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 all that
I just
stuff.
Really love how creative they hide in, like, pretty much... underneath the sand,
mm-hmm.
and as soon as the enemy draws in, that's when they pop up.
Yeah,
they don't like pop up slowly. They jump up and charge at.
Yeah,
the
they'll because I think they'll sometimes use like certain like I don't know if they use that gadget that hover gadget.
Yeah.
I don't know if they.
I
used
find
it.
Their weapons very very good.
Yeah, because they use creative. Mostly blades. I think like that's I think the only like gun type kind of weapons they use are like maybe like bazookas or like RPGs. Mm-hmm. But, like, they were mostly used blades, which is pretty cool. And they just go in and fight them like that. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think the way they fight was pretty cool because it's, like, guerrilla warfare and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So that's kind of their style. It's like, they will sneak attack right now. And then just slice them up. But no, that fight was pretty cool. I liked it. Mm-hmm. Did you have a favorite action scene?
Yes, Maya? I did. Mine was like what you're talking about, like the guerrilla style warfare, where my favorite scene was they're trying to take down one of the Harkonnens, like spice, like almost like a spice mobile mine that they use to like get like the spice to collect it. It's like a big crab looking thing.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of those things in Star Wars. Those like really big walking like dog robot things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The
they're like really tall. Like they're super tall and they kind of like move around really slow.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. But the scene where they're hiding in the sand and they pop up and they start taking it down. And I liked how, obviously, because they showed like, that Paul was of use for them because he's telling them exactly how to, like, because they were shooting at the helicopter that was nearby that was, like, shooting them with, like, with a bazooka, basically. And then he was like, no, you have to wait for them to fire, and then you fire back. That's when their shield's down.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They kept, like, trying to hit it, and obviously it had a shield, but he tells them, like, oh, no, you gotta wait for, like, them to hit you, and that's when you strike. And he used himself as a distraction to, like, get her to, like, shoot at them. But I thought that part was really cool because I'm just, like, this, it shows, like, yes, like, you think, you would assume, like, the Fremen wouldn't be able to win because they're not the ones that have these giant ships, these weapons. Like,
they don't have the upper hand.
No, yeah. That's what you think. But I'm like, this is their home turf. This is their planet. They've been here for thousands and thousands of years. They know how to like move around the sand, and they obviously the Harkonnens don't. They have to use like these like almost like astronaut suits.
Yeah, yeah.
And they walk in the machines and stuff. But that's. I mean, they you can tell they struggle because they're even afraid of, like, the worms, too.
Yes, yeah.
And I think at one point they even hear a machine, like, thudding the ground, and they're like, we gotta move because you're calling a worm.
Yeah, the dog.
Which I'm just like, I really liked it because it kind of reminded me of the Vietnam War and obviously how, like, America lost, and it was kind of like, and again, everyone assumed, like, America's gonna win because, I mean, again, they're the ones that have, like, the big... You know, they have the biggest,
big guns.
They have the biggest military budget. They're going to be able to, it's going to be easy peasy. Nah.
No.
Like, this is not your country. And you're invading someone else's country. They're going to know how to defend it.
The fact that Paul and the Fremen now can control, like, the worm. Or actually, in fact, ride the worm, mind you.
Yeah.
That's when they're like, oh, no.
They're like, oh, fuck. Can I say, I love the visual effects on the worm. The worm looks really cool.
And the way it sounds, the worm reminded me of Star Wars. So you know that pit?
Yeah, the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah. I feel like that's just a worm.
That's pretty much
it. Yeah, it took from Dune. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, they took, like, George Lucas probably saw the worm.
I looked at it closely, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, because, you know, the inside of the worm, like, the mouth. Yeah, even I was like, oh, that's... Yeah, the Sarlacc pit from Star Wars and stuff. But, no, yeah, I love it. The scenes where he was riding on the worms and everything. The memes.
And also, what were you saying?
No, I was saying the memes. Harvey Bardem seeing Timothée Chalamet on the worm. I love that. But you were going to say something.
And also, I forgot about an important detail where Shawnee pretty much taught Paul how to walk in a certain way.
Yeah, the dance. What was it called? But I forgot what it was called, but I know what you're talking about. They call it like a certain something dance, where they had to step in a certain way.
And it's like to not attract the worm.
Yeah.
Which the enemy did not do.
Yeah. They were like, huh? And then the worm comes out.
They're like stopping.
Run. But I also like the effect on the baby worm too. Like the baby worm was actually kind of cool.
And it's practical,
that.
Right?
I think it was a both, like practical and CG a little bit, because when that Fremen lady picked it up, I was like, oh shit, like it looks CG but it looked practical, kind of like a little bit of both, but it looked kind of cool. I like that. But I think my second favorite fight was, of course, the final fight between Paul and Faith Rotha.
Same here.
I did wish the fight was a bit longer, but I just wish a little bit, because it was so cool that I was like, oh.
And the fact is, no music. And nobody can help them.
Yeah,
it was just him and that pretty much those two people on a final battle.
I'm a sucker for fights like that because I don't get me wrong. I love fights with like epic music playing in the background, but like I'm also a sucker for like fights where it's just two people and just no music, just a silent. All you hear is just the grunting and the like
slicing,
all that, stuff, and they were quick like that.
And also, it kind of gives you like a comparison of the first movie when Paul was training with his,
I think
With Josh Brolin. Josh Brolin. With Josh Brolin's character. Josh Brolin. Yeah. Cause Josh Brolin's character was like the general or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Like he was like the military general or something.
He's basically like his dad's boyfriend.
In a way.
I mean, basically, yeah, if you think about it, most likely. They were close.
Because I'm gonna say he was ride or die for his dad.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
A little bit more riding than dying.
Yeah.
Good one. Yeah,
that was good. That was good. Good. That was good. Yeah, yeah. Right on that worm? His worm. thank you. No, but like, yeah, because remember how they were fighting and Paul was good, but like he wasn't like good, if you know what I mean. Like he was good, but he was not there. But
he also got training from his mom too.
That's true. Because his mom was like a trained like badass too and stuff. So there's that. Mm-hmm. But that fight was really, really cool. But yeah, I think that's like my favorite. But I think that's like my favorite action scene. I think the one action scene, I was kind of disappointed, but at the same time, I kind of get it. Sorry about that, people. But anyways, it was the fight between Josh Brolin. Josh Brolin's character, Gurney Halleck, and wow, that's his name, Gurney Halleck. Oh my god,
somebody get a gurney.
I mean, Jason Momoa's character
it's
was
because
named...
when he fights people, they have to ride a gurney away,
bro.
Is that what you know what gurney is?
No.
Oh, it's like you know whenever the ambulance comes to get you, that bed that they carry you. Oh, that's a gurney.
It's a gurney. Bro.
So everyone he fights ends up on a gurney.
All right, I see you. I was gonna mention that like. Jason Momoa's character, his name was Duncan Idaho. So I'm like, so there's that. Duncan Idaho.
Listen here, Duncan.
Listen here, Sergeant Idaho. But it was a fight between Gurney Halleck and Beast Raban.
These names, I swear.
No.
Beast
Beast Raban.
I apologize, folks, for me.
Pita Marak. Beast Raban. But yeah, it was a fight between those two. Because he was like, oh shit, it's about to get down.
Round two, right?
Yeah, like round two. And then he gets killed. It's like, oh, what? But then I remember Maya made a point after, like, when we got out of the theater that makes sense. Because again, Beast Raban's character is kind of like, he's kind of pathetic, basically. So it's like, and he keeps failing. So it's
after
like,
time
and he's kind of a coward too. So like, yeah. It makes sense. So like, you know what?
He was kind of like giving up by the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in the pretty much before he was going to die, he was even like, oh, me and my crew, we're dipping.
He's like,
right,
oh,
now,
we're out.
Let's go.
Bro, remember the scene when like the pilot lost? He's like, I lost him. And then like, he got mad and snapped his neck. I was like, oh. Like,
I feel so shit.
Yeah, snapped the pilot's neck.
He has like,
what are you gonna
what?
Do now?
Yeah, I was like, oh shit, like okay, but
you better have a second pilot.
I know
there was a second pilot.
Oh yeah, there was.
But
yeah.
Am I an age remember? You're the pilot.
Oh, from Rogue One. You're the pilot.
I'm sorry.
The pilot. No, it's okay. Hey man, we're talking about Star Wars
That's
is just
true.
Because of dudes.
That's
so
true.
Hey, so it's all good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, but overall, I think, were you going to say
honestly, something? Seeing those scenes, him and pretty much him and his brother,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much how they handle, like, some of the people that work with them, I would be scared to work with them.
Oh, yeah, the Harkonnens? Oh, yeah, yeah. They were ruthless. I mean, we could probably talk about characters
yeah,
now since, you know,
like, yeah.
You know, the action scenes. But,
The score.
Oh, you want to talk about the score first? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, the music, Hans Zimmer. Come on, bro.
Really good.
Hans Zimmer. Okay, here's the thing.
Where's Hans Zimmer from?
I think he's from England.
Oh.
I think. I think he's British. Hans Zimmer. Of course, we grew up with Hans Zimmer, and mm-hmm. the reason why we grew up with Hans Zimmer is because of the Dark Knight trilogy.
Oh, definitely.
Because we've watched those movies since we were kids. Of course, when we hear his music, we're like, yeah, that's Hans Zimmer. Mm-hmm. But not just the Dark Knight trilogy. I remember even Inception, because Inception came out after The Dark Knight.
Oh yeah, I was obsessed with that movie.
That's a good movie. Mm-hmm. That's yep. a really good Christopher Nolan movie. But
Little
Me
was like edge my seat.
Yeah, no, it was good. Because I remember people were saying that movie was just I'm like, that movie was good. What are you talking about?
It was really good.
It was good. Anyway, Hans Zimmer, which was what's cool about this movie is that like, because Hans Zimmer is known for making. Like his music is really good, but I can see why people get annoyed by it because a lot of his music does sound just
it's just so, very it's so loud.
Yeah. Mm. But This one, it's loud, but at least it sounds at least different than what he usually makes.
Yeah.
So I really like that. And oh my god, the music. Especially when it comes to Fremen. Like, every time the Fremen were around, like, their theme song and the music they play. I know everybody on TikTok knows that. I'm like, I know everybody knows that. But I like it.
Hearing that in a movie theater.
That was
and luckily, our movie theater, the volume was reasonable because we went to another movie theater where we watched Godzilla.
Minus
and it was
one.
So loud.
I constantly
we had to hold our ears.
Yeah, was it? It was the AMC theater.
Yes.
Yeah, because the one we went to was the AMC theater. Because the one we go to is like a regular.
It's like a local theater.
Yeah, local theater. But yeah, the one we went to go Godzilla.
From the beginning of the movie, I was like, ow. I even had to, like, look at, turn to Maya, like, hey,
I literally
do you feel
got
that?
Startled where I dropped my sour straw.
Wait, you did?
No. It was my last one.
Okay, I did not know that.
Me. I even had to turn to Maya, like, bro, like, is your ears hurting?
Yep.
I even turned to you,
like, are you good?
I was literally like, getting a headache.
I was having fun. I was just like, because Godzilla Airtrain, he roared, I was like, ah. I like that.
It sucks because there would be times where I had to drink real quick. And the loud things, I don't want to spill my water.
like, oh, shit. No, but I understand. I understand why you guys would not be crazy.
But this time, our ears did not hurt.
Oh, yeah, no. The volume for this one was like...
It was very reasonable.
It was good, so yeah. But, I mean, imagine watching Dune Part 2 in the 4DX theater.
I would be sick.
Bro, that would be crazy. No, but the music in this one was really, really good. Like the music for the Fremen and the music for the Harkonnens and everything. Like even the music for like the battle scenes was really good too.
Especially when Paul was trying to lead them to battle.
Oh, that scene was cool. Even though we know Paul, we're gonna get to Paul. We're gonna get to Paul in a little bit. But even though Paul was on some bullshit when he was leading the Fremen and that music was playing, I'm not gonna lie, that shit was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Like all right, like that.
I don't know if I should be pumped or scared.
Yeah. Oh no, no. What's interesting with the music? Okay. I'm glad that we're talking about the music because remember the scenes where, remember how he would do something that was like, what's the word? Like something, not like heroic or something like
out of pocket?
Like, not out of pocket, but like something like heroic, more like messiah-like. Like, oh my God.
Something that's in the role.
Have you noticed that in the music would not be, instead of the music being like majestic, be like, oh my God, he's the chosen one. It was more like doom-like.
It's not an uplifting music.
Yeah, it's more like no.
Impending doom.
Yeah. Because, like, remember when he was riding the worm and everyone was cheering, but the music was like, dong, dong.
It almost, what's the word, solemn.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt like, oh, shit, like, nah, like, this ain't it. Like, this ain't it, Chief.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, dude, like, moments like that I thought was really, really cool. Even, like, when Paul was making that speech to the Fremen, even that, and when he was making that speech to the Fremen, the music did not sound happy at all. It was like, nah, this ain't it. Oh, you good?
I'm good.
Oh, okay.
It almost, like, felt like, like, it was, like, the music made you feel, like, uneasy. Like, you shouldn't trust what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which was really cool. I like that touch. Because I'm pretty sure Nini Villeneuve was trying to make a point, like, nah. Like, when I say this is not a heroic story, like, or a white savior story, this is kind of what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. So I was like, okay, like, I could see that. But, yeah, the music overall, really, really good. I love the score. I think Hans Zimmer did a really, really good job with this.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I thought it was really good. All right. You want to get to the characters and the themes?
We're
all
just getting started.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I gotta say, I think Paul in this one was a bit more interesting in this one than the first one, mostly because of the fact that I think Timothée Chalamet did a better job in this one. Cause in the first movie, Timothée Chalamet was just being Timothée Chalamet where he talks like this.
I mean, he surprised me there.
Yeah, I didn't see the movie, but from the marketing and the trailer.
Wait, flip that. Reverse it.
Reverse it, yeah.
Scratch that, flip it, reverse it.
So, but like, again, the first movie, it was just him talking like this, like, talk like this, all that stuff, like, just whispery-ish, all that stuff. And then this one, he was still kind of doing that, but like, but he was doing less of that though. Like, he was trying to show a bit more emotion, or at least trying to put more emotion in his tone and everything.
Yeah, especially since he's the one to lead them.
Yeah, to lead them and everything. So
or be their savior, whatever.
Yeah, or supposedly, yeah. But I did think Paul was a bit more interesting in this one, since, like, as you watch the movie, it's kind of obvious, like, all right, like, he's kind of on some bullshit, just sort of. Mm-hmm. Like, at least in the first half, he was just kind of like, I don't want to agree with this prophecy. I don't give a shit about it, because that's not me.
It's not hope.
Yeah. He's like, that's not me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not...
Well, not even, it's not me. He's also like... Like, it's based on a lie.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. he knows, like, his mother explains to him, like, that this belief in the Lisan al-Ghaib, the Messiah is basically, like, a fabricated religion that the Bene Gesserits introduced to this, like, to, like, the universe, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's in this, for this planet, specifically, they have this idea of a Messiah. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, thousands of years ago. And that's just, it's been... continuing on, and he knows, like, this is a made-up religion.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling me to become their savior when it's all based on a lie. He's like, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's wrong, it's unethical. I don't want these people looking up to me mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But unfortunately, as the movie goes on, because he drinks the water of life,
mm-hmm.
and he gets
that
all...
That came from that worm.
Yeah, it came from the worm. The baby worm. Yeah. And he drinks it, he gets all, like, because again, there's a lot of lore with the dude, but, like, I guess when he drinks it, he gets, like, was it the memories and the visions
he
of, like...
He basically gets, like, the memories of all the female ancestors and the male ancestors. And that's why it's believed that he is the chosen one, because basically, like, the Bene Gesserits, like, they're the only ones that drink, that are allowed to become Bene Gesserits, because, anytime they have a man, like, mm-hmm. go through, like, the trial, they always end up failing or dying. And that they have tried to find a male messiah in the past, and that they've got them to drink the water of life, but it killed them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they believe, like, the messiah is going to be the one that can survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the reason why he's able to survive is just because the fact that his mom has been training him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
His mom has been training him since, like, he was younger. In the ways of the Bene Gesserit, which obviously wasn't allowed because he wasn't even born yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't supposed to be born. So, like, her training him is, like, a big no-no. Because, remember, he's supposed to be a girl.
Yeah.
But he does end up surviving, and that's why his mom was like, yes.
Yeah, like, oh, you're like, yes.
I told you.
Yeah.
And I feel like, honestly, like, obviously, I love her character. Very complex. But I also feel like, she's, like, pushing Paul to, like, do this. That way she can be, like, I told you. Like,
yes,
I told you
so.
She did, like, all to the this. Bene Gesserit, like, cult or community. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're supposed to... I don't know what they call themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, like, because she had Paul against what the Bene Gesserit wanted, because she was supposed to have a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're a bunch of eugenicists where they're having a breeding program. Like, we gotta, like, breed people from this line to this line. And... to create the one, basically, like, royal inbreeding kind of thing.
Yeah.
And because she loved Oscar Isaac's character, what's his name again?
Leto.
Because she loved him and he wanted, like, a son, she gave him a son.
Yeah.
Actually, they weren't even married.
Oh,
they're
they
not
were?
Married. She's just, like, his concubine, because they didn't stay. She didn't marry him specifically that way. If he needed to marry another royal person, it could still happen.
Oh,
but he would
that's
still,
right.
But she would still be his, like, girl.
Oh, okay.
You know, his main love.
Yeah.
But she gave a son because he wanted an heir.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she gave him Paul.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Paul survives, and yeah, because of that, he's able to have the memories of both the female ancestors and the male ancestors, and that's, like, all powerful.
It's
yeah.
funny, because in the first movie, or actually this movie, she can only see the future, but not
slightly,
only that,
slightly
possibilities.
Yeah,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because those visions he had, I remember I heard that apparently those visions are, like, what's happening in other timelines. Apparently,
yeah,
like
it's not just one timeline.
Yeah, because I remember in the first movie he had visions of that character Jamis,
mm-hmm.
and then Jamis is supposed to be, like. Because, you know, Harvey Bardem was, like, his mentor, sort of.
Yeah.
What's his name again? Stilgar?
Mm-hmm.
Stilgar is, like, his mentor, sort of, in this movie. I guess in another timeline, it's supposed to be Jamis, but you know how that happened. He killed Jamis in that fight in the first
yeah.
movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, because of that, like, that's not happening anymore. Now it's Stilgar and stuff. So I was like, okay, that's pretty interesting. But because of all that power, that's when Paul started to believe that, like, no, I can do this. But we all know why he's doing it. It's not really because, oh, I'm gonna lead you guys to paradise. In reality, he's like, no, he's just trying to go against all the other houses.
For killing his dad.
Yeah, for killing his dad and stuff like
Pretty
that.
Pretty much so, just all this, just to avenge his dad.
Yeah, and take the throne and he can be the heir and all that kind of stuff.
And it's funny because, like, he literally got told by the emperor, like, I killed your dad because, well, he's like, you remind me of your dad, and the reason why I killed your dad is because he was ruled by the heart instead of logic.
Yeah.
Basically.
And because of that, he was like, yeah, I got
it.
I had to
take
it down.
Weak. Mm-hmm. And it obviously is not. It causes problems.
Yeah.
You know?
I was going to say, I thought it was actually kind of funny when, like, when the emperor found out that he was still alive, he just didn't say anything. He just dropped the message and he just walked away. And Florence Pugh was like, what the fuck?
It's funny because Florence Pugh's character was pretty much pointing out to Christopher Walken's character, pretty much her dad.
Yeah.
Pretty much told him, like, hey, I feel like he's alive.
Yeah. Yeah, because
I forgot how she knew about that.
Well, I think it was because of the message.
The message.
Yeah, like, she kind of fell into something.
No, it's because of the fact that, like, she believed that he could be alive because of the rebellion of the Fremen against the Harkonnens.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's why she thought, like, maybe he could be alive.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Christopher Walken's character is like, no, he's not alive. He's not going to do that. Mm-hmm. But ever since he saw the message, he was like, oh, shit.
Like, I fucked up.
And again, like, the reason why he made that decision to kill Duke Leto is because the Bene Gesserit told him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember, it's all part of, like, an elaborate plan, you know.
According to plan.
That's plan why. A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
No, but I was going to say that I think the actress who played Lady Jessica, I actually really liked her performance in this movie, too.
Yes.
Because in the first movie, she was a bit more, how do I say this? Because I remember some I think certain Dune fan, there was one girl I watched. She made a point about she did not like Lady Jessica in the first movie because she said they made her a crybaby. For me, I didn't have a problem with that. I just felt like
her man's dead.
Yeah, her man's dead, and I think she just overprotected her son because she knew what she did was kind of like, because it was against what the Bene Gesserit do.
Yeah.
So because of that, I think that, like, remember the scene when Paul was like had to do that test?
Mm-hmm.
Remember how she was crying about that? I'm like, I think it's because she's kind of like,
because she loves her son.
Yeah,
and like that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not again, bad.
Like, this whole universe, like, especially the Bene Gesserit, they're kind of, like, taught, like, don't have attachments to anything because everything is, like, according to plan and, like, you know, that kind of thing. And also, before, when, what's his name? I almost said Jared Leto.
Duke Leto.
When the last thing he told Jessica was, just protect my son.
Yeah.
Like, whatever happens, you protect Paul. That's the only thing I'm asking of you. You know?
Yeah. And again, because, like, that's all she has is Paul and everything. So, yeah, you know what I mean? So, it makes sense. And it makes sense why she's overprotective of him. But I did think it was interesting that she went from that to, like, in this movie, she kind of comes off as sinister now.
Yes.
Kind of. Like, you know what I mean? Because now she's, like...
Honestly, she gives white mother.
Oh, she does.
And
oh, she
that's
does.
Why she scares me.
That's why when she had the outfit and everything, that's when in my
and
head, I was like,
I
wait
was
a
like,
minute.
Something's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, this is...
There's something sinister. I saw going something on TikTok where someone said that basically, like, she's like the ultimate boy mom of the universe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, those mothers that like basically put their sons on a pedestal and like will do anything for them, even if their son is in the wrong, they will like defend them no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my kid is number one, they can never do anything wrong. Like, my son isn't the problem. You are all the problem.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And, like, she'll do anything to basically put him on top. And I feel like...
That's basically what she
is. I feel like, low-key, like, a part of it just feels like she wants to, like, get her revenge on the Bene Gesserit.
Yeah, like, aha.
Or, like, try to get back at them.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was even interesting that the Fremen are telling her, like, hey, you shouldn't be doing these things because this is sacred. And she's like, no, just do what I
and
say.
And she uses the voice on them.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, no.
Yeah.
And how she treats them and talks to them.
Yeah.
Like, she uses knows. The voice. Yeah. And she also knows that, like, what she's doing is technically, I mean, morally, it's wrong. But she knows, like, that. But she still, like, understands, like, I got to get these people, like, again, relates to, like, how religion is. I'm not saying all religious people are like this, but it kind of reminds me of how a lot of, like, these really popular religions are attractive to people who are poor and don't have a lot because, again, they're being told, like, join our church, like, give us the very little money that you do have, and guess what, like, basically, you know, keep yourself from, like, liking, like, finding your happiness on earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing that you're suffering, because when you die, guess what, you get to have heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
You get to be with our heaven and our type of God or whatever. And it's very attractive to them, and they know that. And that's why you see a lot of missionaries going out to these, all these, like, third world countries that are poor. And instead of actually helping these people,
mm-hmm.
they instead tell them, let's build a church, and then
yeah.
now you are part of this church.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
baptize them, they play with these orphan kids, they're okay, bye.
Yeah.
yeah.
And that's kind of what the Bene Gesserit did.
And
yeah.
That's why I feel bad for the Fremen.
Yeah.
Especially
the main guy.
The main guy. Well, who's the guy?
My boy,
Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
Still
I feel bad for him because
he actually believes it.
He really does. And of course, the Zendaya's character,
Johnny,
was like, you know, no, this is wrong.
Yeah, because I remember in the movie, there's a difference between the Fremen. Like, ones that are from the south are the believers of the prophecy, while the ones in the north,
yeah.
I think they're like, nah.
They're kind of like, they're not like atheists, they're kind of just agnostic. Like,
yeah.
We don't assign ourselves to a religion, we just like, we just want to protect our home.
Yeah, like that's
people.
Not that's not our main focus right now.
Yeah,
focus...
our focus is not to like serve the Messiah, it's to save our planet.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. basically get it back from like basically colonizers.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything that Paul did, according to the book or stone, written in stone in a way,
yeah.
pretty much comes true.
Yeah, and because of that, they're desperate. So of course, in the end, they're like, okay, we'll follow you,
yeah.
and all that kind of stuff. And plus, he's shown his power. So because they saw his powers, they're like, oh shit,
he is the one.
Yeah, he is the one. But it's like, and I always like that detail because we'll get to Chani in a little bit. But that's
mm-hmm.
why I love the details that no matter what happens, when every time people praising Paul and bowing down to him, she never does that.
Yeah,
because she's like,
that's a subtle.
Nah.
That's a really good subtle scene. Though.
Yeah, she's like, nah. And Chani was, I really like Chani. At least this version of Chani, because again, I didn't read the book, but at least
mm-hmm.
from what I've heard in the book, in the past, or in the past Dune adaptations, Chani was like, okay, I'll follow you, Paul, whatever you go, and all kind of stuff, like ride or die, right? But in this one, no, she's like, I love you, Paul, but like,
there are even times where she questions him.
Yeah,
there's even a scene where where Paul was like, hey, do you trust me, like, at all?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she didn't respond to him at all. She
mm-hmm.
just looks at him, and she's like, let's just get so-and-so.
Yeah, because, like, Chani is like, I don't care for this prophecy, because I'm not focused on this. And
mm-hmm.
she makes a point, this is how they enslave us, with this, like this, like, dumb prophecy that you guys can fall in, like,
and it's gonna further destroy us.
Yeah, like, it's up to us. We gotta save ourselves. We gotta save our people and stuff.
And
but,
I think that even at one point, she kind of, like, tells him, like, am I not enough?
Yes,
yeah.
yes, I remember
like,
that.
Like, are you not happy? Like, look,
mm-hmm.
we have each other. Like, we're fighting, and we're, like, we're winning, and we're beating, like, these colonizers, right? Because, again, he basically gets accepted into the community. He even gets a Fremen name.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
the
he's
name,
learning the ways
yeah.
and all that stuff. So she's like, isn't this enough? Like,
mm-hmm.
but of course.
What more
yeah.
do you want?
Yeah.
And it's really, and that's what you feel. Because everybody, I've noticed, like, there were certain people that watched it that said they hated this version of Chani. I felt for Chani, bro. Even
yeah.
in the end, I felt for her. Because think about it. Like, she fell in love with Paul, not the Messiah. You know
yes.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And because of the fact now Paul is like, now fall into this path, that Paul that she loves is just kind of gone now. So it's
mm-hmm.
like, yeah, she's not the same anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah, she still has a love for him, but it's like, but I can't follow you on this kind of
yeah,
path. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? So, which is really sad. But yeah.
And it reminds me a lot, again, bringing it back to Star Wars, it reminds me a lot of Padme and Anakin.
Anakin,
mm-hmm.
yeah, bro.
You see the comparisons.
That's mm-hmm. true. Oh my God, that is so true.
You're
oh
breaking my,
God. My
heart.
Bro,
no.
Liar.
You brought her here to turn against
it's
me. You've done
that
yourself. Man.
No, but that, yeah. And that's what makes Stilgar, like, and that's what made Stilgar's character even more sad, because he's like, see, I told you, like, he's the one.
And
like,
again,
can...
like, all these things that are happening, apparently, there's, like, basically, like, okay, there's the prophecy of the Messiah, right? The Lisan al-Ghaib or whatever. But it's, like, if he like, basically, he's gonna do this, and this, and this, and he'll say this. And it's, like, basically, like, kind of, like a script of
yes
to basically keep proving, like, this is the guy, like,
mm-hmm.
this is your Messiah, and he keeps, like, I guess accomplishing these tasks, and that's why it further, like, solidifies, like, the people's belief that he's the savior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Like, yeah, he'll do stuff. Like, the fact that he got the biggest worm.
Yes.
And that's when they were like, oh my god. And that's when the famous meme.
The
Lisa, I don't know you.
Yeah.
And you notice the scene that there's, before he accomplished those things, some of the people that was in there are like, no, he's not.
Like, yeah, like, nah.
But the moment he writes that worm, they're like, oh shit.
Yeah, they're like, oh shit, like, okay.
We are worms.
And I think the final, like, what shows it like that made everybody bow down to him was when he drank the water alive, and that's when they're like,
yeah. Oh, and he
shit.
Survived.
Yeah.
And I like the moment where Zendaya.
Oh, and then slapped. not only he does die. Remember?
Yeah.
He does die, but
tear.
But Chani's tear brings him back to life.
But it was because of Lady Jessica. Remember, she used the voice on her. She's like, "Oh, just bring him back," and or something like that. And because of that,
because her name. Means
like
desert
spring water or spring
desert spring
yeah
and because she goes up to him and cries a tear, that's what brings him back. Does it fall into his mouth, the tear?
I think so. Yeah, or like,
to them water is extremely sacred. Mm-hmm. And you don't waste your water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you
because
don't.
You're living in a desert.
Yeah.
But yeah, her tears what brings him back.
Yeah.
And Chani does not want to do anything. She's like, no, like, you killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing I do is gonna bring him back. And then Jessica uses the voice on him.
Yeah.
On her.
Mm-hmm. And she was happy he was back, but she was just mad because she was like, what the heck?
Like, why did you choose to do this
yeah.
to yourself?
And you feel, again, you feel for Chani the entire time because you're like, bro, like, again, like, she's like, dude, I'm trying to fight for my people. I got no time for this.
I thought you didn't want this.
Yeah.
Because, again, in the beginning, he's telling her, like, I don't believe in this. I don't want to do this.
I'm not like other guys.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do
that. But then he eventually switched.
But again, mommy tells him what to do.
That's true. And, yeah, man, and that's why in the end, when the Freeman are following him, you're just like, no, man, like, this is gonna end badly. Even, like, in the end, Lady Jessica was like, oh, this is the beginning of the Holy War. It's like, what?
Girl, Holy War?
Like, I beg your pardon?
There's more?
I know, it's like, what? Because, again, because I remember in the end, he's not just going the Harkonnens, he's going against all the other houses. So mm-hmm. you're just kind of like, what? So now it's like, again, he's going to be their downfall, which is really sad and, like, pretty fucked up. But, you know, that's how the story goes. So, yeah. But I do like Zendaya as Chani. I thought she was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Javier Bardem as Stilgar was really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
All of them pretty good. I even like the performances of the Harkonnens because everybody...
Oh, definitely.
Because I remember before watching the movie, people were saying that the Harkonnens were just very one note. I thought they were fine for what they were. I mean, they were supposed to be fucked up villains. Like,
I thought that
was the whole point.
The whole point.
Yeah, because I had this idea in my head where the Harkonnens were basically represent like the countries or nations that were obviously fucked up. Like, they were a fucked up nation that goes around and colonizes
one
other
nation under
God,
indivisible.
Like they're just like they're like that.
With liberty and justice for nobody.
Yes, like those European countries that make it very obvious. Yeah, we're gonna fuck up those other countries and colonize them.
Mm-hmm.
While House of Trees. What I like to think about them, I like to think of them as America, where America has do this thing where, hey, let's colonize this area, but let's not scare them away. Let's make them think we're allies. So let's put this front that we're, hey, people, we'll help you. We'll help you with your situation.
Me help you.
Yeah. And after we help you, we expect you to give us, you know, some materials that we need. And then, of course, at some point, they're like, all right, we're taking over.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, and that's kind of what Duke Leto was kind of doing the Fremen in the first movie, think
mm-hmm.
about it. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So, like, the House of Trades are not that different if you think about it.
Yeah.
They just put it in front that they're actually nice, but in reality, it's like, no, they're doing the same thing.
They're doing the same thing, but just making it seem like they're doing it, we don't have a say
mm-hmm.
in what we're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We have to.
Yeah.
Our hands are tied.
Too late. Too late.
Too late.
But yeah, all that stuff. But yeah, I thought Austin Butler, again, I was never a big fan of Austin Butler, especially because, you know, the memes and everything, how, like, he method acted so much, apparently, and now that's why his voice sounds like this now. All that
also because he fumbled Vanessa Hudgens.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I have beef with
him. He definitely did. But him as Fade Rotha was really
yeah.
good.
He's
handsome squid.
Honestly, he kind of freaked me out because it kind of gave me Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah.
He really looked like him, and that's
yeah,
why I was
yeah, he
like,
did.
Oh my god, is he one of the he's like the missing Skarsgård brother.
Yeah.
And the character is very, very unhinged.
Yeah, man. Like, again, he likes to fight and kill.
And also, there's a point where one of them... And there's even a... Oh, yeah, that too. Mm-hmm. There's even a point where he's like, bring me my weapon. And he grabbed out his knife for the... Pretty much for the ring.
Yeah.
His birthday, apparently.
Yeah.
He's the birthday boy. No one questioned that. So, the moment he brought out his knife, he pretty much sliced one of his servants, and he said, it's not sharp enough.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that shit was like, whoa.
And it's funny, because later in the movie, when he was offered a weapon, I'm like, okay, guys, let's step back.
Yeah, it's like, all right, bro, you got it,
Is it sharp enough for you?
Yeah, oh my god.
Yeah.
No, but he played the role really good.
Really good.
Like, he was pretty good. Stellan Skarsgård as the Baron, he was good. Like, I liked him.
He scared me. Yeah.
He talks like this
and start flowing up, like levitating.
Oh, he started levitating? which is pretty, we have to cut the commercial break. Speaking of the Baron, there was one detail that I remember I heard from somewhere. I think it's like this in the book, because they kind of did something like this in the original, like the past few adaptations. But the way they executed was a little weird. Like, I think in the book, apparently the Baron is supposed to be gay, I think.
That's kind of weird, because I heard he was a pedophile.
Yes, yeah. I was so going to bring that
might
up.
That might be problematic.
Yes, yes, because I was going to bring up that in the 1984 adaptation, yeah, he felt more like a creepy uncle, because he had the hots for Faith Rotha, his nephew.
Which I think in the books, he's supposedly molested.
Yeah.
I see.
And I think in the sci-fi series, I could be wrong, because I've been watching, because me and Alicia, recently we've been watching the sci-fi channel adaptation of Dune, and from... I feel like from that adaptation, I don't get creepy vibes, at least from what I've seen. It's more like a gay-coded villain. It's like that's kind of what I got from it. Like, okay, he's just a gay-coded villain. Kind of like in, like, Scar, how people think Scar.
Love
you know what I'm saying?
Scar.
Something like that.
Lion King. Scar is my favorite.
And I actually like that version of the Baron, because he
you get more of, like, a character. Because in this one, he's menacing.
Yeah.
But I feel like for this one, there was, like, kind of a bit of a charm.
Yeah, like,
because there's a scene where he was slowly killing Paul's dad.
Yeah,
and I think he was taunting him.
Yeah,
by pretty much, I'm saying that, hey, we're gonna put your son to death. Oh, did I say death?
I was like, oh, did I say that? Oh, goodness, I say too much. Anyway, we will kill you now. Like, yeah, I was like, I'm like, I actually like this version of the Baron. He's actually kind of cool. But in this one, I can understand Denis Villeneuve didn't do that at all, because I understand, like, he didn't want to make it be problematic, because it would be problematic to make him, like, a full-on, you know...
Like a gay-coded villain.
Yeah, like, make him creepy.
Honestly, that's boring, sloppy. We've been there, done that.
but I think in this one, he just serious and that's it and stuff. So I was like,
doesn't
okay.
mean that he's not a really good villain. Like, he's still pretty menacing.
Yeah, pretty menacing.
Alongside with his two nephews.
And the servants, they changed... I noticed they also changed up with the servants, because in the... I think in the sci-fi show, in the sci-fi channel, his servants were, like, these shirtless, like pretty boy-looking dudes. And I was just kind of like, okay.
That.
Yeah, that's why I was like, oh, okay. But, like, in this one, it's just, like, it's, like, random, like, young people just serving him and stuff like that. Mostly women. I think he killed them, too. Remember that scene?
There was a scene where you hear screaming coming from, like, his room, and basically he got bad news, so he took it out on the servant.
It's scary, because you don't really see it, but you hear it. And the fact is,
even the nephew was, like, afraid to, come in there after that.
Yeah, because you don't see it.
And also, you notice the nephew turned to the side, and he noticed the dead bodies of the
servants. They were just right there in the corner.
Oh shoot! Should I come here in the bad? Like, did I come here in the bad time?
This is a bad time. I'm sorry, Uncle. No, but it's crazy, because this movie, because I always forget the Dune movies are PG-13. So, like, for a PG-13 movie, the tone can be a little darker for a PG-13 movie. Mm-hmm. So I think Stellan Skarsgård did a good job with the Baron and everything. So yeah, the villains were the performances were pretty good, and I think the actress who play as Lady Margot. The French actress, that Bene Gesserit lady that seduced Faith Rotha.
Mm-hmm.
People were saying that she was just there for a little bit, but I think, hey, for what she was given, she was kind of cool.
Given, I did not stop thinking about her.
I didn't. It's funny, because It was the scene where him and her first met.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the time where it was his birthday.
Yeah.
at least he keeps saying it was his birthday. Yeah. Mind you. And
birthday suit.
We love you to birthday.
Yeah, because wasn't she using the voice on him to come to the? Oh, I remember she said come to the room, and he was like, "What is this?" She's like, "The guest room." And I was like, "Oh, shoot!" And he was just kind of like,
"It's her room."
Yeah. So he came in, and she was like, "Kneel down on your knees right now." I was like,
"I get to have fun in the ring, and I get this soul."
And I heard that people said, "What? That's an interesting thing about Babe Ross's character, that he's like in the outside, he's like a menace, dominating like figure, but behind the closed doors, when he's with her, I mean, you could say, oh, she's just using the voice." I'm like, yeah, she's using the voice, but what if he's just into that? Because yeah, she was like, get down on your knees right now. And he was like, okay.
They have him do the same thing what they did with Paul in the first movie, where go...
The pain thing.
Pain box, whatever.
But he had no reaction at all. Like, he wasn't struggling.
And as fact is, she pointed out to the... she brought news the next day. It was like, man, he seems to enjoy it. It was fine.
Yeah. And I heard that, I think, I was listening to a discussion with these Dune fans, these YouTubers that were like Dune fans that were talking about it. And it was this one girl in the chat. She was talking about how like she heard some people who are in the BDSM scene thought that whole scene of the movie was very interesting. Because mm-hmm. it showed that Faye Rotha was probably like was into that kind of stuff. Like in a certain kind of way. So I was like, okay. Like,
still crazy. But
yeah, crazy, but kind of interesting about mm-hmm. the character. So I'm like, okay, interesting.
And it turns out she now holds their child.
His child. And I heard that in the book, they never brought that up ever again. Like, they mentioned in the book that she has a kid with him, but, like, they don't bother. Huh. So that's why Dune fans were questioning that, like, well, so is that going to be a thing in the third movie then? Like, because in the book, they don't bother continuing that at all. They're like, all right, yeah, she has a kid, and mm-hmm. that's it. So it's like, I'm kind of curious about that.
Yeah, I hope it comes back.
Yeah, because they play it off like it was they're setting something up, you know what yeah. I mean? So mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of interesting. But yeah, her the way she played that character, really good, really good.
She wouldn't have to use a voice.
Yeah.
No, not. I come willingly.
Like, ma'am, you don't need to do anything. I'll go. Let's go.
I need her to piss me.
I need her in my life. but no, yeah, she did a good job. I know there was probably some other... Charlotte Rampling as the Reverend Mother, she does a good job as the Bene Gesserit mm-hmm. lady. She does a really, really good job. Mm-hmm. I like the scene when... Paul used the voice on her.
She's like, abomination.
Yeah, she's like, oh! It's like, abomination. In the OG movie, it was so weird because he was like, silence! She's like, nah! Like, she's screaming. She was like, nah! Like, she snored back at him. It was like, yeah. What?
And this one, she's like, oh, God.
Like, oh, shit. Because she's like, what have you done? Like, you gave him all this power? Like, fuck. Now we gotta go to plan C then. Or probably D.
You made this plan so complicated now.
Like, now, like, you ruined everything. But... She did a good job as that role mm-hmm. and stuff. So yeah, a surprising appearance was, I mean, it was no surprise because they kind of spoiled it in the premiere. But Anya Taylor-Joy is gonna be Paul's sister in the future mm-hmm. and stuff. So it's like, and it was like a tiny cameo, but I was like, okay, that's kind of cool that she's gonna be the sister, because people were saying that they thought Anya Taylor-Joy would be best as the princess. As Florence Pugh's character, but yeah. I think
Florence Pugh
was fine. Yeah, Christopher Walken as the Emperor. People were complaining about that. I had no complaints. I was kind of cool. Him. I was cool with it because I said this many times. Christopher Walken has always had a unique look to him, so I thought him as the Emperor is kind of interesting and stuff. So I thought that was kind of cool. He was in the movie for a little bit, but I can buy him as this like scared. Cowardly, evil old man. Yeah. Not evil, but this old man mm-hmm. and stuff. But yeah, I thought he was kind of cool what they gave him mm-hmm. and stuff. So yeah, man. Yeah.
What other characters? Who's the guy who the Thanos guy. Josh Brolin. Did we talk about him?
Oh, no. I mean, we talked about his fight with Beast Brabant.
Yeah.
Gurney Halleck.
Yeah.
Gurney Halleck was an interesting character, but I don't like him. Not like him like, oh, he's just a horrible character. No, I don't like what he's doing because he's part of the reason why now Paul has fallen into this kind of path.
He's, in a way, enabling, giving Paul these plans.
Yeah,
because... It's funny because when he was telling Paul, hey, let's try to do this.
Yeah.
And Paul was like, nah, I don't think so. But he's like, no, seriously, you gotta do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, because he was telling him that, like, look, all the amount of friendly people we have. We can use that
to our advantage.
Yeah, we can use that. And I remember Paul at first was like, I don't want to use them like that, though.
It's funny because he doesn't see them as people.
Yeah.
He sees them as, like, weapons or tools for the plan.
Because in the first movie, remember when Duncan Idaho told them that, like, oh, I met them. I hung out with them for a while. They're a skilled fighter. So because of that, that's why they're like, okay, we can use them. So now that he's hanging out with Paul, now that he reunited with Paul, he's like, we can use him, Paul. And Paul at first was like, nah. But because, again, Paul changes later on. So because of that, that's why Paul's like, you know what?
Fuck maybe it. You're right.
Yeah, you may be right.
In the moment he put on his father's ring and rose it up, that's when he's like, yes.
Bro, yeah. Again, like we said, like Maya said, he's a dick rider for Duke Leto, bro. So of course he's like, yeah, I'm gonna ride and die or die for Paul.
It kind of makes us, the audience, be like, oh, great.
Yeah, because Gurney was like, yes, like, heck yeah, like, that's the Paul I want and stuff. And it's like, bro, no.
This is not a good...
No, man. But yeah, I think Josh Brolin was good in the role. I mean, he fits the role because, again, he's supposed to be, like, this, like, typical, like macho military, like, brute. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he's supposed to be like that. So, like, I think he fit the role. The actress plays Lady Jessica. What's her name? Rebecca Ferguson. She did a good job as, like, being kind of sinister-ish and stuff, because I always forget that she was the main villain in Dr. Sleep.
That was her.
Yeah, and she was good in really that movie. Good. She was
the really, villains really in that good. Movie were, oh my god.
Oh yeah.
They were ruthless.
Yeah, they were ruthless. Oh yeah, they were. Especially her. So mm-hmm. I thought her being a little sinister towards later on in the movie was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I think because I never read the books. So I know people said in the books the themes were well executed, while in the movie I can understand why some people felt like the themes weren't exactly executed well enough in the movies. But I can understand why, because the story's not finished yet.
Mm-hmm.
So not every theme that the movie tries to capture is not well thought out. But at least from the two movies, like, I can kind of see what they're doing, like what they're doing and right. stuff. So yeah, like the themes of colonialism and this colonization, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff, and like the idea of the false idols, these false prophets, right. like these false idols, like leading these groups to destruction, all that kind of stuff. So, and that's what Paul is and stuff. And I remember before watching the movie, people were saying that they didn't feel that way watching the movie. But when we saw, we were like, I kind of got that from got Paul. That. I'm like, it was kind of obvious that Paul was a false prophet. Like, it was pretty mm-hmm. obvious. I don't know what
even
people saw.
Even before the movie, you mentioned that there are some things that are happening later on towards the story.
Yeah.
Especially with Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of already know how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that it was, like, pretty much well thought.
Yeah. So I thought, like, yeah, again, like, I thought what they did, I think Denis Villeneuve at least did a, like, pretty good job.
Yeah.
Making a point that, yeah, what Paul's doing is not good. And what Chani was trying to say, you know,
he may be viewed as a hero in the beginning, but towards the end, he kind of was, like, viewed as a villain in a way.
Yeah, like, well, he might be. Because I heard people made points saying that they don't think he's a villain. It's more like a character who, in his head, thinks what he's doing is right or good. But realistically, it's like, nah, he's just, again, realistically, he's just messing everything up for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he either doesn't know it, or he kind of knows it. He just tries to ignore it, like, nah, what I'm doing is going to work. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
nah, dude. But yeah, man, I that whole message there was, like, pretty interesting and stuff. So, you know, so there's that. Because I can understand, because people were complaining about the first movie, how the first movie felt a little bit white savory, just a little bit. But this one, no, that white savory shit, like, no, that's gone. Like, no, nah, man, mm-hmm. like, it's very clear that Paul is, like, he's not that at all. This is not Avatar. Avatar Way of Water. Because remember, Avatar Way of Water came out, like,
what was it?
2022, I think, right?
2022, I believe.
Yeah, it was like late 2022. And I remember after watching that movie, I was like, yeah, no, this ain't...
Nope.
This ain't it. This ain't Avatar. So, yeah. But, yeah, man. I think what they did there was pretty cool. At least that whole theme of, like, false messiahs or, mm-hmm. like, figure, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think they did a good job with that.
And it's funny because throughout the movie feels more Shakespearean in a way.
Yeah.
I can tell there was definitely some elements from that one story. I'm not all the way, but Hamlet.
Oh, you actually saw Hamlet in this?
Just kind of. Mm-hmm. Just kind of. Not all the way.
Oh, interesting. I didn't see it that way, but I'm kind of curious, like how.
Pretty much like the main character trying to avenge his father.
I don't really know
a whole lot about Hamlet overall, but I do know the main character is like pretty much becomes his own worst enemy.
Because Hamlet, he goes crazy and stuff. He does. That. So no, okay, you know what? No, you have a point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that now. Yeah. Do you think any thoughts about the themes of the movie?
No, I agree with you guys.
Yeah.
Like the thing about like the false prophet, and I feel like if you are from a place of that has been colonized, like your maybe your ancestors or like your parents, you know, come from like nations that have been colonized, like European countries, you definitely like look at Paul and you're like, I don't know, like, this ain't gonna end right.
Nah, bro. Mm-mm. You need a skedaddle.
Especially like when where it shows like, you know, he gets accepted by the Fremen and Chani and him become a couple and like he falls in love and he's like learning the ways of the native people of the planet. But then once he gets a chance of like power for his own revenge, and you can tell like he's using these people for that. Because
again, if he was a true white savior type character, he would have been this wise like person. Like I am with you. I'm one of you. I'll help you. Him? No. When he got the power, went into the Fremen. He basically just. I mean, he didn't cuss him out, but he basically just yelled at him saying, like, yeah, I'm the chosen one, and I have proof right here, so bow down to me and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, damn. And he put this idea in their heads that I'm going to lead you to paradise. And they're like, oh, yeah, but no, he's going to lead them to destruction.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, no, I think the movie did a good job making that very clear that, like, no, Paul's, no, dude, no. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And justice for Chani, man. Justice for Chani.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. But, yeah. Was there anything about the movie you guys thought they could have done a better job at?
I mean, because I know it has to kind of go with what the book, what happened in the events of the book, because it is based on a book.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really think of anything I wish they would have done differently. I kind of, what I wish they did show up was more of the Empire.
Because
I want to know more about, like, what is, like, what are the other planets out there? The world building was cool. Mm-hmm. I did like that, how this one did that versus the first movie. That's why the first movie was kind of bored.
Because
you're kind of on, you're on Dune like the entire time.
Arrakis.
They're there the whole time. And a little bit of the planet where Atreides is from. And that's why I was kind of bored. I was like, oh, I'm just sand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just sand. I hate sand.
I mean, we dealt with Bubble Fett.
That's why I was kind of thrown off of it. Yeah. I was like, I've seen so after the much horror, of Tatooine
after
already.
The horrors of that show, I was like, no more, no more sand.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to think. I was gonna say that was something I kind of wish the first movie kind of did, because I know that in the book and I think in the sci-fi series they introduced the other houses of the Dune universe and stuff like that. But the first movie didn't do that, so I was kind of like, I thought that would be kind of cool if they did that. But that was a first movie issue. I do think it would have been cool if in this movie they did show more. I do agree with you. They should have shown a bit more of the Empire, or like at least the Emperor stuff with his daughter and everything. But hey, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's so much going on in the movie, so I understand. But yeah,
I pretty much agree with what she's saying.
Yeah, for me, yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, but yeah, I think that's all the flaws kind of have about this. So, I think we could just stop right there. All right. So now our final thoughts. Overall, dude, I'm really, really glad we actually watched this movie.
Same.
It was a pretty epic movie, like really epic. Do I think it's a masterpiece? No. It's a really good movie, a really cool experience, but I wouldn't go as far as say the masterpiece, you know what I mean? But it was still really, really good, and I love it a lot. Will it say cinema? I wouldn't say that, like, you know, because everyone's saying that, oh, this movie will save cinema. It's like, I guess.
I think it might help influence, like, other movies that are being created out there, like, in the works. I think it's going to help, like, influence them to, like, make make movies like artistic again. I feel like, I mean, I'm not trying to say make movies artistic, no. But obviously there are some artsy movies that are out there that are like really well shot. Like you can tell they actually put like the time and the care into it.
And effort. Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately it's like smaller, not as well-known movies. Mm-hmm. Or they might be foreign movies.
Yeah,
a foreign
yeah.
film that's not in English, so that's why people don't really know about them.
Or they're like straight to streaming services. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think it's just gonna like, it's, I mean, at least influence the movies that have these like, extremely large budgets to like start putting that, like the time into your story and into like filming on sets, like in real like settings again. And if you're gonna use CGI, like at least make it look as close to real as possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you can't, try to be creative with it or something, you know. But no, you made a good point there. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, no, like this movie was like really, really good. It had me at the edge of my seat.
Same.
Like I had chills. There was moments in the movie where that gave me the chills, not gonna lie. Visually, it looks amazing.
Very stunning.
Very stunning, yeah, impressive. Performances overall, a lot of people were mixed about the performances. For me, they were mostly pretty good, in my opinion. But yeah.
Because the performance in the first movie is actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I just think it's because of Timothy Chalamet just sounds a little bored.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's why.
And that kind of made me feel a little...
Like...
I felt like Patrick... When I first watched the movie, I felt like Patrick Starr.
But the E minor, all right. I get what you mean. And man, it was quite an experience though. It was quite an experience. I think I'll give this movie an 8.9 out of 10.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I give it a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10? Okay.
I give it a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10? Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Like I definitely, like I left the theater literally telling you guys I want to own this movie.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh
Blu-ray.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we've been wanting to own movies for a while because unfortunately physical copies of a lot of movies these days, unfortunately, like, we're going to lose that at some point.
Yeah, like, you can't rely on it to, like, always be there.
Yeah, so that's why lately we've been, you know, getting physical copies of, like, movies that we really
second
like.
Secondhand, if we can.
Yeah, if we can, yeah. So, yeah, no, if this movie comes out on Blu-ray, I definitely would love to own it. And, yeah, man, this was quite an experience. So if you guys, if you haven't seen it, go watch it, dude. Like, it's actually worth
especially
it.
Especially in a theater.
Oh, especially in the theater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely worth watching in the theater. If not, you want to wait till it comes out, Max? That's totally fine, too. You know, all power to you. That's totally fine. And, yeah, that is definitely our review. That's our discussion. Next time, maybe, I'm not trying to jinx it. Next time, we might talk about another movie that we might watch that's coming out.
And don't forget, fear is the mind killer.
Because... only I will remain.
Yes.
I think
is
that's...
Is that how it ends?
That's probably the short version.
Okay.
I think honestly, I wish
I could be a Bene Gesserit.
The Bene Gesserit?
Yeah.
They're cool. I like them. Yeah. They're pretty cool. Yeah. Oh, well. Who can dream?
Who could really...
My name is Flacco.
My name's Maya. My name's Alicia.
And this is Flacco Presents, and we're signing out. Thank you for listening to us, guys. Bye-bye.